If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live. My name is Dan. I'm here with another man named Dan. We are the two editors at winterscoming.net, a site dedicated to all things fantasy, sci-fi, movies, TV, books, dragons, swords, robots, that kind of thing. And of course, to House of the Dragon, HBO's Game of Thrones prequel show that just aired. What I think is, I think we can fairly safely say, is the best episode of this season so far. A candidate for the best episode of the series, and a rip-roaring good time that left me, it literally, legitimately gave me some chills and some welling of the eyes all three times I watched it. This was great. And the title, by the way, is The Red Dragon and the Gold, which HBO has guarded, not unlike a dragon on its nest of gold, another fantasy series, each week. So now we know all the leakers were wrong, but I don't care because I'm happy because that was good. That was some good TV.
Yeah, that was about as good as I feel like we could have hoped for this Battle of Rook's Rest episode that we've been kind of anxiously looking forward to for the better part of the past year, knowing it was coming this season, having seen some, you know, set photos of the battle and stuff like that that they filmed over the course of weeks in Bournewoods in Surrey, England, I think. And they did manage to keep the title under wraps. Kudos. Leakers, we should all, you know, everyone eat your heart out, because it was not a Dance of Dragons. It was The Red Dragon and the Gold, which is the title of this chapter of Fire and Blood that is mostly being covered in season two. How you feeling, Dan? Like, where do we even start?
I think we got to start with, let's go with the big thing and then work our way back to the smaller things that didn't matter quite as much in terms of the overall story. Thanks to everybody watching. Hello to you. Hey, Julie. Hey, Millie. Martha. I agree with everybody. Millie says it was epic. I think it's self-explanatory. Excellent, but very sad too, Julie says. Yeah, which is a good space for a Game of Thrones show. Some of the best Game of Thrones episodes were excellent, but very sad too. From The Reigns of Castamere, the Red Wedding episode, Baelor, the Ned Stark episode. This one kind of combined two prototypical Game of Thrones episodes. The giant battle sode, where we had things like Battle of the Bastards or the Loot Train Attack or the Massacre at Hardhome, with the big character death episode, like a Baelor or a Reigns of Castamere. And did a good job, great job at both. It gave us something we hadn't seen before. Because when it comes to Game of Thrones battles, they ramped up throughout the entire series, right? Like the first big one was Blackwater, which was, they filmed for a comparatively small budget. So there was a lot of like people talking on the inside where things happen on the outside. They worked their way up to something like The Massacre at Hardhome, Zombies, The Battle of the Bastards. Just, we're going to do a straightforward people versus people epic battle. Loot Train Attack. There's a dragon here. The Daenerys' Siege of King's Landing, like a dragon attacking a city. But we had not seen dragon versus dragon in broad daylight, folks that we both knew going at it. They never really did that on Game of Thrones. They had, maybe because they couldn't or they didn't know how quite yet, there wasn't enough. Like the ones we had were like very in shadow in the long night. You really couldn't, it felt very purposeful. Like, look, we don't have the money or expertise to really do this. So just make sure it's pitch. I can't say anything. This was something new. There was a lot riding on this episode, Dan. This had to be good. Not only is it a turning point in the story, not only is it a big character death, not only is it the first major action scene, but I'll be totally honest with you. I was starting to get a little tired every episode of Rhaenyra and Rhaen specifically telling me how cautious we had to be about war and how we need to do everything we could possibly do to not do it, up to and including impersonating Whoopi Goldberg and sneaking into King's Landing as a nun and meeting with your enemy to try and salvage something. Like, in order to justify all that, they needed to bring something big, and they did. This was a rousing success. I'm sad. I'm moved. I've got the chills. I've got the tears. I'm impressed with the filmmaking. It was a rapturous, like, back half of it, especially. I loved it, is my basic takeaway.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you. So we saw this a little earlier this week for the first time, or last week, I guess, and I just haven't been able to stop thinking about this episode. I was so excited to watch it again tonight, and I do think, like you said, they had a lot riding on, you know, this battle, both in terms of like a turning point for the season, because you're right, they did kind of, I hesitate to say drag it out because I like the slower pacing, but they did like drag it as far as they could, the whole plot line of like, we need to really try not to go to war. You know, now we're here. I loved the cross cutting with Rhaenyra telling Jace about the Song of Ice and Fire. I got chills at the title drop, leading right into the battle. And yeah, they really needed to do this justice, this whole big Rhaenys, Vhagar, Sunfire moment, and man, did they. They did change, I hesitate to say change because, you know, I think Shenley in the chat on Facebook says the book description was of the dragon dance was better. And I don't really remember that being the case personally, but the book gives you a bird's eye view of what would happen here. So that gave the show room to do some interesting things with the characters in the air that Martin couldn't have really done in the book. And I'm thinking specifically of Aegon here. The book kind of presents it more as like they made a plan to catch Rhaenys out. Mm-hmm. Dan, how did you feel about Aegon getting drunk, going to town on Sunfire, going into this battle, and then Aemond just, you know, seeing him coming, telling Vhagar to wait, let Aegon go in there and mess things up, and then we'll go in and torch him. What were your thoughts on that? Because that was a huge moment in this episode, and it's brutal, man.
Save big this summer with great deals. All in the Kroger app. Get 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 10 for 10 on items like Lay's Stacks, Rice-A-Roni, and Sparkling Ice Sparkling Water for $1 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Julie has a great comment. I was so impressed you could make out which dragon was which. I thought it may have been a bit confusing, but was pleased it was so well done. Yes, you can tell.
That was crucial.
I'll definitely answer your question, but you can tell they put a lot of effort into staging this, and they thought about, okay, three dragons in the air. How do we do this so everybody knows who's who and what their motivations are and why they're clashing and what's going to happen next? Like, even like the far away shots where like it was Meleys, Rhaenys Dragon, and Vhagar, Aemon's dragon.
Chills.
Like, and Aemon is so much bigger than Meleys. Like, oh, we know exactly what it is. The coloring was great. We kept cutting back to like their faces on it, which is really important. And I kind of remembered the bells, where the director talked about how we never saw Daenerys's face after he started burning the city. And I'm like, I wish we did. And in this episode, I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. The show is called House of the Dragon. We know there's going to be dragons, so they put a lot of effort into the dragons, the people on the dragons, making sure everything's clear and concise and exciting, and it's really paying off here. I loved the Aegon bit. I loved the setup, because the battle wasn't just technically well done, which it was. It was wonderful. It was.
Yes.
It built throughout the episode very nicely, and Aegon getting drunk and leaving was part of that. To me, the episode starts when we see Kristen starting to cut off dudes' heads on his little march through the Crownlands. And you can tell he has something a cooking, but you don't quite know what. And you start wondering. And then there's that great scene in the small council room where Aegon's trying to take control of the Visionian, and Aemon's just humiliating him, bodying him, speaking High Valyrian in front of everybody, and forcing Aegon to reveal he knows like maybe four words, and doesn't know the subjunctive at all, and just having to kind of reveal he's not that good at this, and just wresting control away from him. And on top of it, his mom is just being, listen, the things that Aemond and Alicent said to Aegon about him being frivolous, appointing idiots to the King's Guard, about not taking the advice of people that are wiser and better at this than he is, more experienced, they're all true, but they were not being terribly delicate about it. They were all kind of delivering it in a way that is just going to make him miserable. And I get why Aemond is mad, because he got made fun of in a brothel and was forced to walk out naked by Aegon when he was drunk, so he's getting some revenge. Alicent is mad that her entire justification she can't do anymore for why I support my son on the throne, because my husband changed his mind. Now she knows that's not true. So she's being a little mean, but it leaves Aegon in a really bad place. This guy's son was murdered 2 episodes ago. Can I just remind everybody of that? Can I just remind everybody that Aegon's son
was... It's a bad few weeks.
Freshly murdered. And now he has his brother and his mother pointing out things that, again, it's not like they're wrong, but... It's time for the kid gloves. So it really sets up really nicely that he's in a dark place. He's knocking back a couple of bottles of Pinot Noir, and he's ready to go. And like, I don't care. I'm going to take this dragon out. I'm going to go fight the war. Clear what everybody says. And get on the dragon, just hoping that he doesn't get pulled over, and just go do this. I believed it. And again, I love Aegon. Aegon's my guy, which is a horrible thing to say. Because there's just so much to him, and they allow him like moments even then of joy. Like, I loved when he kind of nuzzled Sunfire. Like, he was smiling in that moment.
Yeah,
he was miserable, he got drunk, that helps sometimes, and go and talk to your pet helps sometimes too. And the show's always been trying to sell the notion that this is a tragedy, and a tragedy is where everybody wants, like, thinks they're doing the right thing and inevitably comes together and nobody wins. That's a tragedy. And too much of the time in House of the Dragon, it's felt like everybody has felt like they're doing the right thing because they don't have the right information, and it's coming together and kind of nobody winning. This felt like they were kind of getting away with that. They were getting away from that. I knew Aegon has all the information, and I knew why he wanted to go do that. Kristen's got all the information. Aemon has all the information. Rhaenyra, I mean, they're hiding the fact that they're going to surprise them with dragons, with Vhagar, but that was honestly a pretty clever plan. And I loved how they hid that,
it was.
We saw it. I mean, exactly what it meant. Give the signal. Gawain's like, what signal? We know, like, he's not going to tell you, you idiot. we knew it. God, it was so good. The way it was so few words, like we knew that Aemond, okay, Aemond just want you live like you said. He wants his brother to go and see if he can, I don't know, maybe die or screw it up, and then he'll go save it. Aemond tried to commit fratricide three times this episode. Three times. He didn't go join Aegon when he flew into battle against Meleys. He burned them both. And I loved Aegon going like, oh, thank God Aemon's here. What are you doing? No! And then at the end, he was thinking of stabbing him, and he was like, Kristen's here. Fine, I won't. And I got all of their motivations. Like Julie said, even though we didn't, they were it could have been confusing with different dragons, different characters, lots of special effects, but I understood it all. It was very smooth, and then they added on the wonderful filmmaking on top of it with the pregnant pauses and the cuts to black and the slow-mo, and I mean the special effects look tremendous. Oh, dragons tearing the bellies out of each other, so good. I just really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, this is, you know, we talked about this a little bit on Wednesday in terms of like people wondering if this would be comparable to something like Battle of the Bastards, and kind of came back around to this idea that like, this is the first time House of the Dragon has executed like an event episode, it, like on that level. Like, it's hard to compare. It's like comparing apples and oranges a little bit. Those two episodes do different things, but this is House of the Dragon's first go at something huge like that. And yeah, the dragons, that's a sad thing. 'Cause you're right. Like, this story is a tragedy. Like, it's a Shakespearean tragedy in Westeros. And I wasn't really prepared for how painful it was going to be to watch the dragons killing each other, because we only saw that happen twice in Thrones. And so when Viserion gets speared by the Night King, and then when Rhaegal gets, you know, scorpioned by the Iron Fleet. And those are both horrific, sad moments, but there's something even sadder about these dragons who like obviously don't really have like, you know, an opinion, like they're just being led into this fight by their riders, and they're going to tear each other to pieces. And yeah, that was real sad. I like how they leaned into some of that stuff, you know, with Rhaenys and her connection to her dragon. Like, the last thing she really sees before she drops is her dragon dying. Like, that's awful. They gave her a really, really good send off, which I think they needed. Yeah. Like, this is the first time this show has done a big death like this. I mean, since Viserys's death was very different, much quieter. But this is the next big one since then. I guess we can count Luke, but that was, we cared less about Luke and more about the broader implications of everything that was going down. But I think Robert Harris said, so Olivia Cooke was great this episode. I wanted to bring it back to something you said, Dan, about the setup with Aegon and how, you know, Aemond dressing him down in the small council chamber, that's almost like the reverse of what happened to Aemond in the previous episode, where it's like both of those instances are like Aegon went to a brothel, which is a place Aemond felt really vulnerable and humiliated him in a place of vulnerability. And like, the flip of that is Aegon feels really uncomfortable or vulnerable in the small council chamber because he doesn't really know what the hell he's doing. So Aemond just completely embarrassing him. And then Allison,
yeah, I completely
agree. She was almost more like Otto this episode than any other episode of the series, where like telling Lara Strong, like, we're going to war. The supporters of each side believe what they wish. Thousands will die. Like, just her delivery of that and the writing of like that. And then Aegon, it was so good. And Aegon, like, coming to her, you know, if you think about it from like psychology perspective,
he was reaching
out. He essentially
out.
Was saying, nobody listens to me. I feel like, you know, useless. No one wants my opinion. And she scoffs and she's like, what opinions would you have? Just don't do anything. Like, do us all a favor and do nothing. And like, how sad that that's the thing that pushes him over the edge. And poor him and Sunfire, they're in pretty rough shape. Gosh, what are some other highlights? Are there other parts of the episode you want to talk about in particular?
I liked the Allison scenes. So there were the scenes in the episode that kind of were all leading up to the battle and then the battle. And then there were ones that were a little more
Yes.
off. I guess the Allison ones kind of straddle it. I think that Robert Harris said Olivia Cooke was great in this episode. She was. She was very, very good. And it was just kind of fun to see how the revelation from last week, this show, I'm split on it because this show doesn't like just saying the thing, except in the dream sequence. It likes kind of subtly implying things. And I've often used the phrase, like, I can see the gears in their head turning. I've found myself saying that a lot this season or last season, too.
Yeah.
Which is good. Sometimes I wish they were a little bolder about it. But I liked the Allison scene because I could see her working through, like, oh, God, great. My like, whatever I've done since my husband's death has been a lie. I've been telling myself he changed his mind. I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And kind of like hating herself for it a bit. And I think that's why she was like, it doesn't matter now. Cause she's like, kind of like, well, I boinked it. So I might as well just, I might as well just go down with the ship or see the ship into the harbor at this point. I can't do anything more. So that's why she's feeling a little dejected. And I like to think that if she'd been in a better state of mind, she wouldn't have been quite so brutal towards her own son who'd lost his son to a murderer a couple days ago in the timeline, as far as we know. But she wasn't. And she took some moon tea to make sure she doesn't have Kristen Cole's baby, which I can't say. But you know what? No, I continue to enjoy Kristen Cole. Actually,
it was a great episode for him.
This is an episode. Sometimes I want the characters to say more. But Kristen especially is an inscrutable one. He just doesn't say what he's thinking. So we're all surprised when he kills a guy at a wedding or smashes a guy's head into one of those small council balls. This one, when I love having Gawain Hightower around because Gawain Hightower is kind of like me. He's like, what do you mean we're going to Rook's Rest? We're going to Harrenhal. He's like,
yeah.
Nope. So I can kind of like sympathize with that. What are you thinking? And then it makes me think, oh, he does have a plan. Like he is thinking. And he got knocked off the horse. He was kind of our point of view on the ground. He was surprised. His speech was kind of good. I like, oh, by the way, his speech was like, hold to your courage, hold to your wits. I don't know why I'm doing a Scottish accent. It's definitely going to be called the St. Christian's Day speech. Get it? Shakespeare joke. So he was good. Let's talk about Rainey's for a second, because I was affected by your death. I really liked it. I don't think the characters in this show have popped quite as much as the ones on Game of Thrones, but they made this work. Like, there were a lot of good moments for her. I liked her kind of forlorn.
Yeah.
Once it became clear that she had to fight Vhagar and she probably was going to lose and she still stuck to it anyway, and she said, like, attack Maelys in Valyrian in kind of a dejected, sad way. I was like, that Rhaenys, you do it. You can do it. Her eyes as she kind of like fell into Rook's Rest, what kind of like at a remove, like a 1,000-yard stare. That was really affecting. She had her best not on a dragon scene when she went to Driftmark, those damn docks that we returned to once an episode.
Yeah, that was a great scene. I was going to ask you about that.
It needed to come sooner, but it was a good scene. And she kind of creepily reaches up to Alan of Hull and puts her hand on his face and is like, your mother must have been very beautiful, which if you don't know what's going on, I mean, even if you do, it's pretty creepy. But we'll find out what that's about soon. It gave her some depth.
I like that they set that up. I like that I was not expecting, because obviously knowing Rook's Rest is coming this episode, that's a lot for Rhaenys to do. I wasn't expecting the scene of her and Alan of Hull, and the, you know, it's implying Rhaenys knows some things about Alan's past, obviously. And it, you know, I see some people in the chat already talking about this stuff. I don't know how in depth in the spoilers we want to go, but that was a really cool scene, and I like that Rhaenys got that scene before her send off because
me too.
This was Rhaenys' send-off episode, and it was a banger of an episode for her. Eve Best, really, I love in the Black Council chamber when, you know, she's like, it has to be me, and then she eventually just like struts out of the room. Like Rhaenyra accepts, like, yeah, she's right. It does have to be her. And I'm not going to tell her no. She knows what's up.
I kind of wish that they kind of wrote that scene so as to, again, they kind of like doing this, so as to avoid having Rhaenyra actually give the command, like, Rhaenys, you go. They kind of just like talked around her and just like the slightest nod, which it still totally worked. But yeah, I like that Rhaenys got more depth before she went, because honestly, this season, she seemed a little like a morality delivery system. Like every scene with her is like, you must exercise forbearance. You must exercise caution. There's no war, so hateful is war between the kin, and no war so deadly as the warping dragon, which is all true. It's all right. I don't know. I want a little more than just being taught a lesson. I want to be thrilled. And to do that, I'm going to need some more, to know more about you than that you're good and nice and pure.
Yeah.
And that she kind of has misgivings about her husband's fuck around and find out child is good. It's a good moment, as is her tearing a dragon's belly out with her dragon.
It's gonna be interesting to see how Corlys reacts to all of this next episode, both in terms of what that makes him do in relation to his surviving family members. There's some great stuff in the book about him being angry with Rhaenyra for not letting Jace go help Maelys during that fight, because Rhaenyra didn't want to lose Jace. The show, I don't know if it's going to have that same, you know, not to untie, because Rhaenyra just kind of makes a good point, like, you're not experienced enough. And it is like Jace would have been absolutely toast if he went to this battle. But yeah, really good stuff for Rhaenys. I'm trying to think of who else had really big stuff this episode that we need to talk about.
Let's take a comment break really quickly, because as always, you guys are killing it. It was Alan, not Adam. Sorry, I might have said Adam, yes, but I mistook. Damia asks, what do we think about Alicent's discussion with Lara Strong, where she mentioned that Viserys died 2 weeks ago, has thrown the piece off, while she has had almost a few episodes with Cole in that time? I think it means that Alicent and Cole got busy quickly. Sometimes a hate sex relationship just happens in the wake of your husband's death, and there's a war on, and you find new fun feelings. I don't know what's going to happen with him next. I am interested, though. Thank God I'm interested, because for a while I just wasn't. I think I said this in our preview episode. This is the first episode of the season to end with someone other than Alicent or Rhaenyra.
Yes.
Which is a sign of the show's growing confidence in its deep bench of characters, which you need, which is very important and a very good thing. Do you think Aemon was going to kill a... And I know that someone before asked, is Aegon dead? I think we can... I'll go ahead and spoil that. I mean, we don't know for sure. We haven't seen the next episode, to answer Julie's question. Hopefully we'll see it soon. Yeah. HBO, we love you forever and ever. Be our Valentine. I'll just spoil it. Spoiler incoming for what happens to Aegon. Pausing once, pausing twice, pausing thrice for mute. If the show sticks to the books, and I can't imagine it'll deviate this far, he lives, but he's... incapacitated for a while. And even in the trailer, they have like him in a big canopy bed, so I think he'll be, I was gonna say fine, he'll be alive.
Definitely not fine. Without going too deep, I don't expect Aegon to ever be the same again, is what I would say for that. Which really, you know, similar to the way this was a send-off episode for Rhaenys, it was almost, I love that it was like a casualty on both sides of this war, because obviously Rhaenys and Maelys died, but like King Aegon and Sunfire are pretty much out of the fight for the time being. Like, I imagine, so in its own way, like this was the send-off for Aegon's petulant trying to be king as a fairly happy-go-lucky but conflicted person, like his journey as the things he is going to be are going to be different after this point. So it feels like the end of a chapter. Yeah. Yeah.
He's a character who grows. He is the Jaime Lannister of this show. Not in such, he's not nearly as heroic, but he is a guy who's going to go through tons of changes. He's going to go from an awful, shallow person to an awful person with depth. I'm so here for it. I want to see more.
Yes, I am really curious to see what they do with him, what they do with Sunfire, because Sunfire is still alive as well, provided it sticks with the book, which obviously I think it's safe to say it's probably gonna, at least in regards to Aegon and Sunfire. I
mean, they made sure to make sure we saw that Sunfire was like moving at the end. I don't know why they would do that if they wanted to kill him.
Yeah. You brought up, so we haven't talked at all about Daemon's dreams.
Man, do it.
And because I think we're a little split on this, because I really enjoyed Daemon's dreams. I think you enjoyed them a little less. What are your thoughts on one, Daemon's dreams, and two, Alice Rivers? Because she was kind of in the mix there. It's kind of, you know, left ambiguous how much she's affecting things until she gives him the whatever that gross ass goop was, that you don't just drink goop from a woods witch, Daemon. But yeah, what were your thoughts on all of that?
Eat this. Okay, what is it? It's the part of the show that it was one of the scenes that weren't building up to Rook's Rest, so it kind of like felt cut off in that way, which is fine. That's a normal thing in a show. You have different plots running. I'm split on the dreams. Game of Thrones pretty much never had them, which I liked. I feel like dream sequences, flashbacks can be a crutch in TV shows. A lot of them sort of do it just as a way to get inside the head of a character they don't know how to express otherwise. I have this feeling that they're doing it to kind of fill out time. Maybe I'd feel different if the dream sequences I thought were better. They don't seem a little obvious to you. Like, Daemon walks into the Red Keep throne room, and Rhaenyra's like, "This is what you wanted all along." And then he cuts off her head. "This is what you wanted, isn't it?" Like, it just, I was saying earlier how the show almost pretty much never like come out and says what's happening.
Yeah.
Except there, in Daemon's head, it was pretty blatant there. I don't know. It just seemed a little on the nose for me. And then the one where he's kind of chasing his Aemon doppelganger was fine, I guess. I liked the scenes where he just talked with the people, where he talked with Oscar Tully, who was kind of this little kid who was out of his depth. I liked the Blackwood one, because that set up with more plot. And I liked the Alice Rivers one a lot. I thought Alice Rivers was fun. I thought Gail Rankin's bringing a lot of personality to it, where she's like, "Anything, you seen anything of note?" Like, she was fun. She was a good time.
She had great delivery.
Yes, I will see more of her. The dreams themselves, nah, that's a no from me.
Okay, so I, in defense of the dreams, I personally like them. So obviously the Song of Ice and Fire books use a lot of dream sequences. George R. R. Martin really does lean on them. And like you said, like, Game of Thrones really dialed that down. We still got like a couple here and there, but not anywhere near the same amount. I like Daemon getting these dreams in Harrenhal. I like it as a way to explore his psyche, because, you know, the Aemon, him seeing one, the Aemon wig on Daemon looked really funny. But him getting that moment of seeing Aemon
funny.
Well, no, they weren't, but they were going for Daemon realizing that Aemon is a reflection of himself. That is going to become more important as the rivalry between Daemon and Aemond becomes more important in the overall war, I think. But the Millie Alcock scene, I saw some details that I really liked there. So, like, yes, the throne room is a little on the nose, but also, like, that was one, their very first scene together was the reverse of that. Rhaenyra coming in and Daemon sitting on the throne. So I liked that reversal. I saw on Twitter, I think Joanna Robinson from The Ringer pointed this out, that young Rhaenyra, Millie Alcock, in that scene is wearing the same clothing that adult Rhaenyra was wearing in the nice. Finale of season one when Daemon choked her. So I think there's a little, there are some good subtle details, I think, in the costuming, I think in the setting up of things that still are interesting to me. I loved Alice Rivers. Someone asked a while ago if we thought they were going to try to pull a thing like Alice Rivers is Melisandre, that kind of connection. Really hope not. I think you can have more than one cool, witchy, prophetic character in a massive series like this. You don't necessarily need to reuse Melisandre in a situation that wouldn't make a lot of sense for fan service.
When I hear something like that, I get like a hot, nervous wave washes over me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Julie makes an interesting point here. So she said, I feel like I feel like Daemon should be actually doing more.
Totes
and
agree.
This is kind of, yeah. And I think that is a similar to Blood and Cheese, like starting the season with Blood and Cheese and how they kind of wrote themselves into a corner with how they needed to navigate that as a season premiere thing instead of the way it was in the book. Like, I think they wrote themselves into a corner with Daemon because in the book, he takes Harrenhal at the same time that Luke is killed. So when the Battle of the Burning Mill happens, Daemon is already afield with an army of river lord, like river folk. And he, when that happens, if I remember right, he takes the Bracken Castle. So there is a feeling of treading water a little bit with Daemon, where they're using this opportunity to, one, build up Harrenhal as this haunted castle, and two, really dive into his psyche. Like, Daemon is kind of being Ebenezer Scrooge here a little bit, I feel like, where he's like walking around in his pajamas and he's getting visions from his past and his future with Aemon and whatever else. And that's fun. And I like it. But I do hope we see Daemon, you know, and from the preview for next week, where we do Caraxes is in next week, it seems like finally we are going to see him start to move. So maybe that's a testament to the pacing that we're all feeling this way. And the next episode, we'll hopefully see Daemon doing more because he has been kind of hanging out in his PJs. Matt Smith's comments about it being a lazier season for Daemon make a lot more sense now at this point.
I don't like it. It's bad. I want things to be moving. It's a war. There's a war on. That implies movement.
There is a war on.
That implies
on.
Momentum. That implies excitement. It's not the time to laze back and do a psychological deep dive. It feels like they want Matt Smith on screen. Look, I know it's a hard choice.
Who can blame them?
But I can't. Don't just have him be in the show less. If you don't have nothing to do, have him be in the show less. And use them sparingly. It's okay. Is my opinion anyway.
Fair.
We'll talk about that more. Anything else you want to hit before we close out? Oh! We didn't really talk about Rhaenyra. I mean, yes, we did a little bit. I loved Rhaenyra's speech to Jace, where she tells him about the Song of Ice and Fire. Because of how it sort of kind of widens the scope. Again, the setup was so good. It was the plotting was good. The motivation with Aegon stuff was good. The kind of hidden Krista motivation was good. And that speech was so good because it brought home the themes. Like, you had everything. You had the idea that this battle has to mean more, not just to Rhaenyra, but like to the audience, than isn't it awesome when dragons kill each other, which it is. It should mean even more than we're concerned for Rhaenys and Aegon's welfare, which we are, or at least I am both. I'm sure not everyone's concerned about Aegon's welfare.
Yeah.
But he's my favorite, so I love him. I want him to live. that speech put it in this bigger context where, again, it brought it back to this theme of tragedy, of like self-immolation, of internecine warfare taken to the point of self-annihilation. Because when people believe they are carrying out a righteous cause, they're willing to do more than they would otherwise. So you kind of have this almost fanaticism behind it, and it really gives it this halo around the whole thing, this like exciting, electrifying sense that something, that it means something more, which is great. And I like that it kind of I like that it kind of leaves room for, like, I'm not sure it means what she thinks it means. Like, I think there's room for it to, you just assume you're the chosen one, which is kind of like what happened on Game of Thrones, and you let yes. that grow your ego to the point where you think you're the Messiah reborn, and you will do things for it. I'm still not sure where exactly they're going to land on Saint Rhaenyra, but that was a very good moment.
Yeah. I think that is Julie. So for those the audio listeners, Julie in our chat just said, I wish Rhaenyra would have told Jace when the Winds of Winter was coming out. And yes, don't we all? Yeah, it is an interesting thing. I'm curious where they're going to land with Rhaenyra too. So Rhaenyra really only had two. She's been largely absent for a lot of the early part of this season. It has been Rhaenyra grieving, Rhaenyra trying to get a handle on stuff. And this episode was a turning point for her where she's now saying, fine, we're going to go to war for a bigger reason than just a crown. But I think, so one, I enjoyed both of the speech scenes Emma D'Arcy had. I loved the line about how Rhaenyra inherited 80 years of peace from her father, Viserys. So Viserys and King Jaehaerys's reigns both were very peaceful. And she needed to know before she was going to throw it away that she couldn't preserve that. Loved that. But Rhaenyra saying, she had some kind of line like, she alone was trusted with this knowledge. And I think there is like a thing about the exceptionalism of that was at the core of like what happened with Daenerys. Like only Daenerys could save everyone. And that led her down a path of like ultimate destruction, kind of like this idea of beware anyone who says they're the only one who can show you the way forward. Because if you think about it, like if it was that, yeah, or the boys is good with that kind of commentary too. You know, Rhaenyra could have made some kind of peace accord, surrendered, and passed on that knowledge to the Greens and found some way forward like that, abdicating the throne. She's choosing not to. So it is this interesting gray area where it's like she's saying all the right words, but if you stop and think about it, it is still being propelled into this war when did they really need to be for this? I don't know if they did. But that's what makes it fascinating.
The question is the show thinking of it that way? Or is that us reading into it? Because it's a great point. No one's pointed that out. I guess she did consider surrendering, though. Yeah, she did. It's doing a good job. I'm a little nervous, though. Don't make her a saint.
Yeah, it'll depend on where it goes from here. Yeah, and Robert Harris says, according to IMDb, there are only 8 episodes this season. So this is the halfway point. The big turning point of the season, the Dance of the Dragons, is now underway. Man, what an episode. I just need to shout out the battle one more time. I love how they kind of made it almost like a kaiju movie a little bit. Totally. Because they had so many focus scenes of people on the ground just like, you know, once the dragons started fighting, the battle almost kind of becomes irrelevant. It's mostly just people trying not to get smushed or crushed or set on fire. The shot of Kristen touching the soldier after and the armor, just the always body fun, inside it is ash. Like, yeah, they really, really, I'm so impressed with this episode.
It did what it needed to do. And then some. It was great. I loved it. I'm glad it happened, and I'm looking forward to what's next. We'll be here to cover it all. We'll be here every Sunday night here in the Winter is Coming YouTube page and Facebook page to cover all things House of the Dragon, talking it through, breaking it down, making sure you know what's up. Join us. Yes. Join us live. You can download some podcast form wherever podcasts are available if you want to, you know, hear us after the fact in the car, at the gym, doing dishes, whatever. Give us a like, subscribe to us. We'll be your friends forever. Keep commenting. Love that. And join us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time at those same places, YouTube and Facebook, where we talk about House of the Dragon and also other things happening in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, movies, books, TV, all that jazz. Daniel, anything you want to say before we sign off for the night?
Long live the queen that never was, Rhaenys Targaryen. We shall never see her like again.
We shall never see her like again. But we'll see you on Wednesday and Sundays going forward.
Nice.
All right, everybody. Have a great night. Bye.
All right. Take care, y'all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.